You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right to the phone calls. A quick reminder, anytime you want to jump in and ask a question, you can just press 1 on your phone. If you've already pressed 1, don't do it, though, because that'll take you out of the queue. And we take calls in order, so the sooner you press 1, the higher the chances are. Phone lines are full. The odds are we will not get through all of the calls tonight, but I'm going to do my best to get to as many as we can. So, you know what? Let's go right to the phone calls tonight. Let's start off in Michigan. Guy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. How are you tonight?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
I got a question on fuel surcharge. More companies I talk to, the more confused I get, because everybody seems to do it different. Is there a set rule, or is it just whatever they feel like making up?
No, one of the easiest ways to think of this, well, the answer to your question is whatever they feel like making up. That's the answer. Okay. The easiest way to kind of get your head around it is to think of the fuel surcharge as nothing more than a supplemental freight rate. Are there any rules on how to set freight rates?
Is there?
No, we can set any rate we want. I could haul something for 10 cents a mile if I wanted to. I could haul something for $10 a mile if I wanted to. So fuel surcharge, for the most part.
Whatever the market dictates.
Yeah, now having said that, because that's the rule, there are really no rules. Having said that, there are some norms. And I will tell you that the most common set of guidelines, yes, we need to know, let me think, we need to know a couple things in order to calculate a fuel surcharge. We need to know what the base rate for the fuel is. And by base rate, what I mean is when fuel goes above what cost, does that kick the fuel surcharge into place? Well, forever, as long as I can remember, for the most part, it's been $1.25. So if magically tomorrow fuel went to $1.24, then everybody's calculated fuel surcharge that was using $1.25 would be zero. The fuel surcharge would just go away because it normally kicks in at $1.25. And the next thing we need to know is the fuel mileage I'm going to use to calculate it. And the most common is 6. Now, I will say that I haven't looked at any of OWIDA's stuff in a couple of years, but the last time I looked, they recommended that fuel surcharges kick at $1.10 a gallon and that 5 miles a gallon used for the calculation. I don't know many companies that do it that way, but you can use any number you want. If once we know it, now we have to know those numbers, then we can calculate it. All we need is the fuel price that day. And now we have the 3 numbers we need to calculate a fuel surcharge. But we could say, well, we're not going to let fuel surcharges start till $1.50. We're going to use 6.5 miles to the gallon. Anybody can do whatever they want. Somebody could just say, somebody could come up with a totally different system. And somebody could say, well, we're just going to throw in a percentage on top of our freight rate. They don't even have to follow the formula that I talked about. But that's the most common formula that I've seen. $1.25 is when it kicks in. 6 miles to the gallon is what we calculated on. Once we know the fuel price, then we just do the math.
Okay. And real quick, what do you think of the C-15 cab?
What year?
07.
Not wild about it. But on the and just to be fair, I don't like any engines after 04. None.
I know that.
Yeah, so as long as we know that's where we're starting from, I don't like any of them. To me, to say I don't like the Acer, I don't like any of them. I will say, though, in the defense of the ACERT, we see fewer maintenance problems. Now, they don't perform all that well. Fuel mileage usually isn't great. But we don't see those repetitive maintenance issues the way we do with EGR. We don't see a lot of EGR valves going bad and V-pods, and they have their problems, but they probably had less problems than EGR engines. Now, the interesting thing is, when push came to shove in 2010, CAT really couldn't figure out a way to make their ACERT 2010 compliant. And rather than start all over again, they said, we're just not going to build engines for on-highway use anymore. Not in North America, anyway.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, I'm helping a guy, my old dispatcher I worked with had another company. He's looking to buy a truck, and I'm thinking about driving it for him. I'm just helping him, because everything he goes, he listens to a salesman, and they're giving him the pitch. I'm thinking to buy it. I'm like, don't get anywhere near that Packard motor. I'll be running the other way.
It's unfortunate that we'd love to be able to take buying advice from the salespeople, but honestly, that's the last person I listen to.
Right. Well, they want to move a truck that's been sitting on their lot for 6 months.
Yeah, and honestly, most of them, what they know is how to sell trucks. Most of them don't really know trucks. Most of them don't know specs all that well. They know what they have on the lot. They know what they always order, but they don't understand the dynamics behind it. They don't understand fuel mileage issues. They don't understand all the maintenance. They're just there to sell trucks. They'll tell you just – and I'm lumping them all together. There are obviously some good salespeople out there, but most of the people I've dealt with really don't know that much about trucks.
Right. Well, a lot of people, I think, have been listening to you because they're snatching up Detroit diesels faster than you can shake a stick at them.
Yeah, not only are Detroits hard to come by, but the other thing we're finding is with all the glider kits being built, because we've been talking about gliders for so many years, rebuilt components, the prices are going through the roof. I mean, literally,
right.
We just were working on a project truck right now, and we were actually able to buy a new transmission cheaper than a rebuild. That makes no sense.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Cummins ISXs are everywhere, and I'm trying to stay away from them if I can. And getting a 13-speed is really getting hard to come by as well.
Yeah, having an Acer would not rule out a truck for me. If I had to buy an 07 truck, now I'd rather just not own one, period. I'd rather have a glider or something else. But if I had to own one, the ACERT actually kind of moves up on the list some because we don't see as many maintenance problems with it.
Right. Well, it's the issue of getting a good enough truck where the companies don't balk at you when you're trying to sign on with somebody, but old enough where you ain't dealing with all the EPF issues and the other issues. So you got that balancing act.
Right. Yeah, and honestly, for me, the problems all started in 04 and 05. So, yeah, if I, do an 07, at least I don't have DPF and I don't have SCR, but we still have all the same problems. It's unfortunate. But the ACERT, I'd have to throw it right in there with the rest of the engines. And actually, when it comes to maintenance, I'd kind of put it on top. We just don't see as many problems. Let's see. Let's go to Orlando. Adam, to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
What's up tonight?
Oh, it's all bad. So, the good old 98 Freightliner took a dive on me after a million plus miles. I threw a rod, destroyed the crank. This is what I'm looking at the moment. I'm looking at, from Cummins, replacing the motor, pretty much, drop a new one in, con in, and turn the key and go for about 25, or go out and actually pick up a 2008 for between 45 and 55, because I do go to California. I just haven't, with the 98, I've been registered with California for the longest time. I just don't stop at the scales and don't give a damn personally. So that doesn't
right.
really that doesn't really swing my choice one way or the other. I'm just getting conflicted information. If I'm going to buy a truck, I'm going to buy a 2008, and I'm going to be California compliant. If I don't, I'm going to put $25,000, possibly close to $28,000, into my 98 with almost 2 million miles on it, and you know, get a new engine and move on down the road. And
It's a tough call. I mean, if California were truly not in the equation, now I understand you're saying it's not really affecting you, but they are in the equation. You have to go. And
right.
if for some reason you go out and spend $25,000 to $30,000 and then 6 months from now California starts cracking down, now you've got to go out and replace that truck again and you're going to be way behind the eight ball at that point. That's what
I'm afraid of.
I could
just put the $10,000 into the DPF filter and not spend, you know, the money on the new truck.
True. I wish I knew more about how the DPFs are acting on older trucks, because I can't give you any advice on that. We have, like, zero experience.
Sure.
We do. Well, I shouldn't say zero. We do know that the few trucks that have done it and reported back to me lose 4 to 5 tenths of a mile per gallon right from day one.
Right.
And I'm not surprised. We know all that back pressure is bad for the engine. But beyond that, I don't know enough about it. So if California wasn't an issue at all, I would actually have a third option for you, which would be to go out and find a million-mile, you know, 98 through 2001 Volvo with a Detroit in it. And
right.
I think you'd actually be better off rather than putting – because, I mean, we can buy those trucks for $12,000 or $15,000, and you get a year or two out of them, and then you do an in-frame. But overall, I think you've got a better truck than what you would end up with $25,000 in yours. But, again, I don't want you to go spend $15,000 on a truck. 6 months from now, have to do an in-frame because you, even if it's running good, you can't put a DPF on an old engine with a lot of miles. So now all of a sudden you're into, you know, $40,000 or more by the time you're all done with all this stuff.
Right.
Well, this is a tough one. It's just really lousy time.
What we were looking at with today was a 2009 Penske truck that one of the Freightliner dealerships had.
Okay, let me give you a piece of advice. I think that because your freight is in California, I mean, it's not something you run to once in a while. I mean, that's your dedicated lane.
Yeah, it's my dedicated lane.
Yeah, so we've got to get you compliant. As much as I hate it, and I know you could run around them for a while, and we don't know how hard they're going to enforce this. If it were a matter of you asking me, Kevin, should I keep my truck knowing I'm not compliant? I'd say, yeah, keep your truck and run it till they give you a ticket. Or run it until something happens. But when you say, Kevin, should I put $25,000 into my truck and then not be compliant? I really have a hard time with that one. So I think you are probably in that group. You're going to have to look at 08s or 09s. But let me just give you a piece of advice. I would never buy a truck from the rental companies. This comes from Purex
right.
Penske.
Right, yeah. What about the Schneider ones?
Schneider's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
That some of the big fleets have great trucks. You know, if you
okay. You
might even look at, like, Mesilla Valley's Pro Stars.
Okay.
You know, their 08, 09 Pro Stars are absolutely decked out for fuel economy. They're already 6x2s. You know, they've got
right. That
rear tag axle. They were spec'd from the ground up for fuel mileage. Now they have ISXs, which not my favorite engine, but they're doing pretty well for those guys over there. But
where would I find the truck with their old truck? Call them.
Check with the international dealers in Las Cruces, because they, the company,
okay.
they The same guy that owns Mesilla Valley owns, I think he owns two international dealers too. So I'm pretty sure he sells all his own trucks. One of them is in Las Cruces. I forget where the other one is, down there in the southwest somewhere. So I check with them. That's an option. The problem
Schneider's
with Penske, yeah, Schneider's good. Walmart, if you get trucks coming off Walmart's fleet, those are usually nice.
Don't even worry about the Penske one. I'm not going to even give it a second thought anyways.
Good. But this is lousy timing for you because I think you could have gone under the radar for 6 months to a year probably with that older truck. But now your hand is kind of forced. You've got to do something. And I think the better idea for you is just to comply.
All right. I appreciate it, Kevin.
All right. I wish I had heard, like I say, lousy timing. But you know what? You've been through a lot before. You'll handle this just fine. So keep me in the loop. As you're looking at trucks, send me the specs. Send me the VIN numbers. We'll run them through RigDig for you, and we'll help you find the right truck. Or we'll do the best we can anyway. Let's go to Minnesota. Les, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
What can I help you with?
I got an oil sample over there for you.
All right. Let me see if I can find it here. Tell me a little bit about the truck. What year and what engine?
06 Detroit with the Freightliner Classic with a Detroit. EGR is gone bye-bye.
Got it.
Long time ago.
So.
Hence, it's still rolling with the high miles.
Right. And the... You know, it actually looks good. I mean, you've got no fuel dilution. You've got no real soot. This looks like
and
a better.
I had a ton the last 5,000 miles. I had a ton of my generator used for when I'm sitting wasn't running in December, and I was running every day. I didn't have a chance to fix it. So we had terrible weather in northern Illinois, so it didn't shut off for almost 4,000 miles.
Wow.
At the end of that, and it still came in. I was impressed with that. Now, and as you can see, it sat in my pickup for quite a while before I got it sent in. Is that what's causing that oxidation to have jumped up?
Yes. Yep, that's exactly
that
now.
Is?
So the oxidation, I'm not worried about. That's just a time thing. The sample does degrade after you take it and just let it sit there.
Okay, because the one before sat a little while too. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm a little
confused on is the big jump in lead.
That was the other question.
Yeah, which is kind of odd because there doesn't seem to be anything. The lead is more than likely coming from the bearings. Now, it's not a huge amount. 52 parts per million is not huge. It's not anything. It's not like, you know, your bearings are going to fail tomorrow. But I don't know
but
why.
But it's climbing a lot here, yeah.
Yeah, and there doesn't seem to be any reason. Now, normally, what we see first is some sort of degradation in the oil. We either get fuel in there, and that'll attack the bearings. We get coolant in there. That will attack bearings. We get dirt in there. That could attack bearings. You don't have any of that stuff. So the only thing I can imagine is that you're just starting to see some wear metals because of the miles on the engine. It's just getting to that point where it's going to start wearing out.
Now, here's a question for you. As you can see, you know, everything's good. I mean, hell,
that's all right.
This thing doesn't have any more blow-by really than the day I bought it. You know, with 460,000 on it. Now, on the old mechanicals, we used to go in every 250,000 and change rod and main bearings. Is that something? We quit with the electronics. Now, that's something I can do myself. I've got my own shop. Is that? Am I making a mistake there?
No,
or
you're not.
Is that still a
although,
possibility?
It is still a possibility. And the reason we kind of stopped doing it, two reasons. One, manufacturing processes got better, so our bearings were actually better quality. But more important than that, mechanical engines used to dump all kinds of fuel into the crankcase. It was almost impossible to get around it. So even with 10,000-mile oil changes back then, we used to run around with fuel in our oil almost all the time. And it was just really hard on the bearings. Well, that doesn't happen much anymore. But we are starting to see, for some reason, we're starting to see engines with lots and lots of miles on them, and the cylinder kits are still in really good shape, like yours. No blow-by.
Right.
So why would we tear it down and do an in-frame? We wouldn't. Maybe we do need to roll some bearings into it. I wouldn't do yours yet because 52 okay. on lead is still nothing. In fact, since you're able to do your own,
here's the thing. I've developed a slight oil leak. The oil pan is starting to leak on it, the gasket.
Okay.
So come springtime, by spring, I'm going to need to pull the oil pan anyway.
You know, roll a set of bearings into it then. I mean, you'll be fine. Yeah, it's not that big of a cost since you're doing it yourself. It probably won't be entirely necessary. But since you're going to pull the pan off and you can do it, go ahead and throw a set in.
Okay. Well, and like I say, my concern was, well, is there a reason why we shouldn't?
Nope.
You know, here's the thing. If a cylinder takes a dump 6 months after I do it, I'm really not out anything. I'm out a day of work is about it.
Yeah. Which is, you know, no big deal. So, yeah, to answer your question, there's no reason not to.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Kevin. I'll let you take care of some other folks. I appreciate all your help, as usual.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Now, I just want to clarify, because when I answer a question, I'm answering that question specifically, that person's situation, and I usually have a lot of background information. I've got an oil sample in front of me. I've got some history. I know what the blow-by is. This particular caller has a shop. He can do the bearings himself. This is one of those cases where you're going to pull the oil pan. Go ahead. It's not something I recommend very often. Most of the time, we don't need it. But this is a case where a little bit of preventative maintenance might make some sense, and it's not going to cost that much. Let's go to Nebraska. Harold, welcome to the program. What's up?
Listened to your show last night. You scared the heck out of me, so I went and got a bunch of bubble wrap so I can buy one of those cars, being that they're so unsafe.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure with the high we have, when I get in this car, it's blow over the top and be killed.
Yep. But the reason I called was questioning on rear ends. You keep on talking about 264s and 275 or 279s. Now, you say that the 264 is for 65 mile an hour and 79 is for less than 60?
Right.
Now, what if you put the 264s in and you run slow? Is that going to degrade your fuel mileage, or if you put 279 and run fast, which one is the least of the two evils?
If I had to choose, I am, and this is something I've changed my mind on over time, and especially since we got the scan gauge, I would have defaulted to saying, well, throw the 264s in even if you're going to run slower. Now, after seeing all the feedback, I'm saying, no, throw the 279s in even if you're going to run faster, especially when we're talking about older pre-emission engines. So we also have to look at what engine we're in, what year. We have to look at what part of the country we run. If somebody said they ran, you know, Florida to L.A., and they were at 62 or 63 miles an hour, which is kind of right in the middle. And they pulled light freight. Let's throw all those things in there. Well, I might say go with the 264s in that case. I think overall we'd be better off. But if somebody says I pull out of Denver heading west and I'm heavy all the time, even if you run 65, I might default to the 279s. They're going to pull better. They're going to keep our RPMs better. It's going to be more drivable. So those two, we might default to either one. We just have to look at all the different things going on. But I'm leaning more and more towards the 279s and keeping the RPMs a little too high rather than a little too low.
All right. Because like I got one of these 13-speed single overs, then I was just kind of curious on that for a future reference. And because right now I'm on a dedicated run to where I'm light most of the time, but I've been finding myself in the last couple loads pushing a little bit harder than what I normally do. I had to kick it up to 65 a couple times, but normally
yeah,
I'm down your 60 mark.
I would default to the 279s. They're going to do better on fuel mileage most of the time, and they're going to make the truck more drivable.
All right, because right now I got 293s, and so then I'd be driving in direct gear with the 279s, right?
Right. Now, 293s, if you know, if you're ever at 55 miles an hour, run that thing in direct, and you'll see great fuel mileage.
Right. 64 mile an hour in direct.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but if, and I wouldn't spend the money to change gears in your truck. I'd stick with the 293s and just run slow as often as I could. I mean, you're kind of in the similar position I've got with the, you know, I've got a double overdrive with 390s, very similar to direct with 290s. And with my 12.7 Detroit, it does great. At 57, it's fantastic. Let's go to Illinois. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Great to talk to you.
What can I help you with tonight?
Looking at to see, I'll give you a little background. I bought a 98 Kenworth off of Craigslist for $8,000. It's a million plus. I put $11,000 into it to get it running. And I've had it for about 3 years now.
Nice.
I've changed out my tire. When I bought it, the tire that I noticed was on the passenger side. It was showing cord, so I changed it out right away. About 8 months went by, I replaced it. I've done a lot of stuff. I put about $13,000 into it right off the bat. Rear ends, kingpins, et cetera. Then this past March, I did an in-frame. That was $13,000 on the Series 60. Passenger steer tire, three times now. Every 6 months, the passenger steer tire wears down on the inside, a goofy cupping, and I rotate it. Run it for a little longer, but the steering wheel just shakes me out of control, so I end up replacing the whole thing.
Okay, so before you replace it, when the wear pattern is really evident, have you ever taken it to a really good alignment shop that knows what they're doing and let them look at that tire?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I live in Wisconsin, so I want to hit the was that MDI?
MD Alignment, and they're in Iowa, or Chad, who is MD Alignment trained and one of their best. A lot of independent shops use MD Alignment equipment and techniques. So MD Alignment has their own alignment shop, but they also design and manufacture equipment and training. So there are shops that are totally separate from MD Alignment, but they use the equipment and the training and the methods. And Chad is one of those. Chad was trained by Mike Beckett, and Chad is top-notch. He's in Kansas City, is fantastic. If you've got a problem,
okay,
and you do, he will fix it. Guaranteed.
Awesome.
If you can get it to Kansas City and you can get it to Chad, he will look at that tire, he'll tell you what's wrong, and he'll fix it. I have no doubt.
Fantastic. I run through there every other week, if every third week.
Oh, perfect.
Usually do the Chicago-Minneapolis runs, and I do quite well. But like this run, I ran down to Texas, and I'm on a $9,000 week right now. It's going great.
Nice.
So
well, I'm going to put you back on hold. Lisa will pick up. She'll give you Chad's phone number. It's Chad Hone. It's Alignment Solutions. Chad is really flexible. He'll make appointments, nights, mornings, weekends. He does whatever he has to do to get the job done. All right, so I just realized, well, actually, I didn't realize. Lisa told me, because she's the one that stays on top of this stuff. I don't like to give out phone numbers on the live show for a couple reasons. One, I don't like to take the time. With all the commercials and all the other stuff. Two, I don't like to give out the phone number in case it's wrong and then we get all screwed up. But since we're on the podcast, I'm just going to give you the phone number now for Chad. So if you're listening, whoever, and you want to write this down, grab something to write with. If you need alignment or if you have tire wear problems, I can't recommend Chad highly enough. He is top-notch. And Chad's phone number is 913-709-6199. Chad has been at the CMC with us several years now. He is our go-to guy when it comes to alignments. You can't go wrong. Let's go to Idaho. Penny, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello there. What can I help you with?
Hi, I have a 2011 Cascadia, and I'm looking in the near future to get some new drive tires. I run the duals, and I was wondering what you would recommend, as I've been listening for the low profile, et cetera, but wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yep, if you are going to stick with duals, I would highly recommend the Michelin X-Line Energy D.
Pretty sure that was it, but I couldn't remember.
Yep, that's the one.
Okay. Okay, that's and can you tell me where to find, where I can get your scan gauge?
There are only two places you can get my scan gauge. You can either order it directly from us, either on the phone or on the website, or Pittsburgh Power. Those are the only two places that have mine.
Pittsburgh Power. Or are you online? Okay, awesome. Well, it's great to contact with you finally, and appreciate everything you do, and I thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And you will be very happy with both the tires and the scan gauge, I promise. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I have an old sample Lisa sent you, but real quick, I wanted to ask your opinion about something. I talked to you a month or so ago about a vibration in my truck, and the vibration is when I'm sitting still. I can also feel it when I'm driving, but it's more prominent when I'm sitting still. And I took it to the transmission shop, and they said it's coming from the back of the motor. So he said it may be the flywheel or it could be the clutch. Now, I eliminated the motor because I had it rebuilt at Pittsburgh Power back in the summertime. So my question to you is, it's not causing me any problem. It's a headache when I try to idle. I mean, it's when I'm trying to sleep, but I don't idle that much.
Right.
I have a warranty on it that expires February the 8th. And I was just wondering, should I let them go into it to look for it, knowing they can't duplicate the vibration while it's apart? And they may not find anything.
Who is the warranty through?
Transaxle.
Okay. Here's the problem I have. My experience with third-party warranties is that they will go to the ends of the earth not to cover something. I mean, that is their business model. Sell as many policies as we can, repair as few trucks as we can. That's how they make money. I'm just not a fan of third-party warranties. So what I'm afraid of is if you go in, they're going to say, well, here's the thing. We don't know what it is. We have to tear it apart to figure it out. And that's true.
Right.
We're just going to have to tear into this to see what it is. But once they tear into it, if they determine, oops, this isn't on our warranty list, you're stuck with the bill.
Okay.
And I don't know that this is worth fixing yet. Now, if I knew for sure they could fix this and it'd be covered under warranty, I'd say, yeah, absolutely. It'd be crazy not to. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think the case is going to be they're going to tear into this, and one of two things will happen. They either won't find the problem, and then you're stuck with a bill, or they
right.
find the problem, but it's not covered, and you're stuck with a bill. And it might not be anything we absolutely have to take care of right now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so right, let me ask you this. Let me put it to you a different way. If you had no warranty whatsoever, would you take this into the shop and maybe get it fixed, or would you just say, I'm going to wait a while and see what happens?
I would wait a while, because it's not, like I said, it doesn't
right.
affect the fuel mileage. It's just a nuisance.
Right.
And it's not causing any problems. I would just on it.
So don't let that warranty sway you, because the odds are 99 times out of 100, the warranty's not going to cover this work.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So now we're looking at an oil sample here, and everything looks pretty darn good. You know, all that stuff up in the top right under additives, you can just totally ignore that. The moly got flagged, you can ignore that. And other than those things, this actually would have been a zero. You have no fuel dilution, no soot, no water. Viscosity is perfect. Base is nice and high. And we have virtually no dirt or wear metals. This is a good, clean sample.
Well, how about the sodium and the potassium in it? I mean, it's low, but do you think it's residual from the last or from the previous oils?
Yeah, if anything, it's residual, because it's definitely down.
Okay. All righty. All right. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. So there's nothing to do on this one. Obviously, the next sample, check the sodium and potassium, see if it's going up, down, staying the same. But right now, based on the history and what's in this one, nothing to worry about, nothing to do. Let's go. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. How are you doing today, Kevin?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
We just recently replaced a Volvo that burned to the ground with a 2010 Kenworth ISX. And
well, that's
we're
too bad.
Thinking about what, the Volvo burning to the ground or the Kenworth?
Both.
I don't know. Kenworth has turned out to be fairly decent so far, but we haven't had it about a month. So we wanted to delete the regen system. Is that something that's possible?
Anything's possible. There are a couple issues we have to deal with. Are you going to be going to California at all?
No.
Okay. Nobody else in the country is really checking on this kind of stuff. California, you certainly run the risk of being in violation. But just so you know, it can be done. It is illegal. It's illegal to
right.
alter the – yeah, okay. So just so you know that part. It can be done. I don't know who's doing it. Two things have to happen. One, you have to have a shop
that
knows.
He could do it.
Okay. How much was he going to charge you?
66.
And this is an ISX, right?
Right.
I'm almost a little worried that the price is too low.
It's a shop we've been using for years. It's kind of, I don't know, the friends and buddy kind of discount. He's been good to me.
Okay.
We were talking
and
to him. It's going to be one of those, you know, here's your cash, you know, I don't need a receipt kind of thing. It was never here.
Perfect. Yeah, and that's kind of the way it has to happen. But the other thing I would just do a little checking on, since you're friends, I mean, I don't think this is too much to ask. I would want to see another truck that he's done it on, and I would
right.
want to see the results. The mechanical part of deleting this stuff is time-consuming, But it's not that difficult. You pull the old parts off, you replace, you know, or you pull the new stuff off, you replace it with some old things where you need to, you get rid of stuff. That's all mechanical, and it's fairly straightforward. The reprogramming of the ECM is what I'd be more concerned about. Does he know how to reprogram the ECM properly?
Well, he said he's got a program, you know, that I don't know where he got it from, but he said he's got a program for that. But what I was thinking is sending it all to Pittsburgh Power, you know, while the truck is down already, and having them, you know, reprogram the ECM. Would that be something you would, you know, look at doing? Or
here's the thing, that their Pittsburgh Power is, you know, they've been through a lot with the EPA. Every year, every model, they had to redevelop these systems every time. Like, you can't program the ECM on a 2010 the same way you could on a 2007. You can't reprogram, you know, an Acer the way you do an ISX, or a Volvo the way you do a Cummins. So whether or not they can match the programming to what this other shop is going to do, and whether or not they will because of the EPA and what's going on, you would have to talk to them. But if you've got a shop, they know what they're doing. I would want to talk to somebody who's already had it done and get some results. And, you know, if this guy's offended because you ask that, that would worry me. I mean, if he knows what he's doing, he's got a program, he's done it before, then there should be no reason why you can't get in touch with those people and find out what their results were like. Because this is a lot of money, and a lot of things could go wrong if it's not done right. Let's go to Nebraska. Justin, welcome to the program.
Yes, Kevin. We have a 2012 Tornado, runs 505 horse at 1650 torque. Typically weigh between 85 to 88,000 and run everywhere west of the Missouri. And we were thinking about increasing the horsepower, but I just wanted to see what the correlation is between increasing horsepower and fuel mileage. If doing that would almost kind of guarantee fuel mileage results.
It absolutely won't guarantee fuel mileage results. We could end up with better fuel mileage results, but it's not guaranteed. So let's talk about the correlation. There is a direct correlation between burning fuel and producing horsepower. It's a direct correlation. In order to produce more horsepower, we have to burn more fuel. The exception to that is building an engine that produces horsepower more efficiently. But that's not what you're talking about here. You're talking about, you know, performance modifications. You're not talking about tweaking the ECM or, you know, improving airflow in and out, improving fuel flow. All we're talking about is going into the ECM and saying, okay, produce more horsepower. So that engine isn't going to produce any horsepower any more efficiently. It's just going to produce more horsepower. And again, to produce more horsepower, you have to burn more fuel. Now, having said that, if we have a truck that produces more horsepower and we know how to use it properly, going up and down hills primarily, we can sometimes create better fuel economy out of higher horsepower. Does all that make sense?
It does. My concern was because of our weight and then running west in the hills.
Well, and you bring up a good point. For me, in my operation, running light and running in the south, it wasn't a good idea to turn up horsepower. It didn't make any sense. In your operation, running heavy and in the hills, it does make sense. But it can backfire on you. Who drives this truck? Do you drive it?
I drive it, yes.
Okay. So if you get it and you get a scan gauge and you turn up your horsepower and you really pay attention to driving and drive by the scan gauge, the odds are your fuel mileage is going to improve. If you throw somebody in this truck who could care less about fuel mileage and all they do is want to get up the hill faster, that horsepower will help them up the hill faster, but it's going to burn more fuel.
I understand. Yeah, and that's what I was wondering. If we do increase, because it's under warranty, so if we increase the horsepower, we have to pay some more money for the warranty. So that's, we really can't back out of it once we do. So I'm just trying to figure a return on investment. And, if we do.
Yeah, if it's you driving it and you're obviously concerned about fuel mileage, and if you have a scan gauge and you're really paying attention, like I say, the odds are you will get better fuel mileage out of this.
Okay.
All right, so it's not a guarantee, but it can certainly happen. And when we're heavy and we're in the hills, more horsepower helps as long as we use it properly. Let's go to Alabama. Jason, welcome to the program.
How you doing today, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Yes, sir. I have two quick questions for you. One question is a tax question. What I want to ask you, how do you do taxes when you have other businesses involved, like if you have a truck business plus you have a farm business? I'm getting into that. Do you do that separately, or do you mix it all up, or what?
Well, I'm going to assume for now that the two businesses, the farm and the trucks, are operated as sole proprietorships, not corporations, correct?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Okay. So on the farm, you would keep all of your income and expenses separate just for the farm operation, and you fill out what's called a Schedule E. Schedule F, I'm sorry, for a farm. E is rental properties. F is a farm. Then for the trucking business, you keep all the income and expenses separate. You fill out a Schedule C for the trucking business, and both the Schedule F and the Schedule C get attached to your personal tax return on the 1040.
Okay. And the second question is, skim gauge, does it come with directions on how to work it and all that?
It comes with a very clear book on how to set it up, how to use it. We have some YouTube videos where we walk you right through it. So if you can get online, you can go to YouTube and you can watch the videos, and we show you even more how to use it. And then you can always call Jeff Zarley, who's our technical director, and he'll spend time with you on the phone showing you exactly how to use it. So you've got a book that it comes with. You've got YouTube videos that we've created, and you have access to Jeff.
Okay. Now, how do I get that device?
If you want one right now, I could put you back on hold and Lisa will help you order one. Or you can go to the website, letstruck.com, and go to the store. Or you can call us on the regular business number.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and order one right now.
There you go. I'll put you back on hold. Lisa will be with you in just a couple minutes. I know she's screening some calls for me right now. And then she'll get it taken care of. We'll engage out to you, and you will love it. Now, if somebody's listening and, you know, you want to know the number, the business number for all stuff for us, whether it's the scan gauge, profit gauges, CMC, whatever it might be, you can always call our number, which is 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Let's go to Kansas City. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What can I help you with?
Hey, I have a hot shot business. I run a 8600 International with a Cummins ISM.
Okay.
It's got a 10-speed, and it's got 373s rear end.
Okay.
And I was wondering, I done put the pit start power on. I gained 1 mile a gallon, and I'm getting a Fleet air filter. It should be in. I was thinking next of putting a fast system on. If I push more horsepower to it, they talk about, is the 10-speed, is there like different size 10-speeds?
Well, there are transmissions that are rated for different torque ratings, but I can pretty much promise you that even if you did every performance upgrade we could think of to that ISM, that ISM is really never going to put out enough torque and horsepower for you to have to worry about transfer your differentials. They'll handle it just fine.
And what about, it's got 379s in it. Should I, with the short hauls, and my max is normally less than 10,000 pounds. Should I do the 269s on it, on the rear end?
You would want to go, you've got a 10-speed, it's with 370s. It's got to be an overdrive. Ninth gear is going to be direct for you. If you were
right.
going, if you wanted to run in direct, you would want 279s. You could certainly do that. And you're almost giving up 10th gear completely. I mean, 10th gear is about the only time you might ever use it is bobtailing.
Really?
Yeah, because that 10th gear is really a double overdrive. Even though you only have one overdrive gear, we might as well call it a double overdrive because it's 0.74, a pretty deep overdrive. And that little ISM with 7.9s and a 0.7 transmission isn't going to get out of its own way in 10th gear. In 9th, it's going to run great, and your fuel mileage is going to be better. You're just kind of giving up a gear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think I got on my rolling resistance on my drives are like 120. If I did
okay.
a super single, do you think it's going to help enough to make a difference?
You know, we can calculate it pretty well. If you're at 120 and you go to the Michelin wide singles, the Energy Ds, you go down to about 89, let's call it 90. That's 30 points in rolling resistance. It's a pretty good estimation that for every 10 points we lower rolling resistance, we pick up about a tenth of a mile per gallon. You're going to pick up roughly 3/10 of a mile per gallon by making that switch. So you could go look at the number of miles you drive and your fuel cost and say, okay, if I pick up 3/10 of a mile per gallon, calculate savings, you'll know when your break-even point is, and you can kind of make the decision yourself.
Okay. Right on. So, all right, would you change that 373s out?
I wouldn't do that until I had done almost everything else. Because changing out the differentials is fairly expensive. You know, $4,000. This is a single axle, right?
Right.
Yeah, we'd be able to get it done for $2,000 or $2,500 or so. But just so what you do is you say, okay, I've got $2,500. What could I spend it on to improve fuel economy? And there are probably still 6 or 7 other things that make more sense than changing the rear gears right now. Now, if you get all the other things done, and you go, wow, this is fantastic. The more I do, the more money I keep saving, which is normally what happens. Then you get to a certain point, and the only thing left to do is the rear ends. That's the time to do it. It's usually one of the last things I do.
Okay. All right. In the FAS system, I've had somebody quote me 7 hours to put it on.
That's about right.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
I've even had the owner of FAST put one on my truck. It was a special project. The owner did it. He's pretty darn good at it, and we were darn near 7 hours. Sometimes they can – and I've put them on and taken 9.
All right. Is it fairly easy to do or no?
You know, it's not that complicated. It's just time-consuming. They're just, you know, you gotta drill into the tanks, put in some new vents and run some new lines, and you gotta put in brackets, and it's not overly complicated. It just takes time.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. It's just one of those that when you look at it, you go, boy, you should be able to do it faster than that. But most of the time, the installations I've seen, 6 hours is pretty darn quick to get one on. 7 isn't outrageous. Let's go to Illinois. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you this evening?
Doing great. What can I help you with?
Okay, I'm looking to buy a 03 Volvo pre-emission. It's got the 465 Volvo engine in it, 10-speed. And it's got 355 rears, and it's a one owner with 780 some thousand miles on it, and the guy's asking 20,000. What do you think of that? Is that too high?
What year did you say it was?
An 03, and it's the 670. It's the condo.
Boy, you're really challenging me here, and I'll tell you why. I love so much about this. I love the truck. I love the fact that it's an 03 and pre-EGR. I love the fact that it's got 700,000 miles on it. That's so hard to find in older trucks. The 20,000 doesn't even bother me. You know, for a good Volvo 670 with 700,000 miles on a pre-emission, I would drop to not even. Now, I would also negotiate, try to get it better, but I'd 20 on it wouldn't bother me. There's only one big thing I don't like about this truck.
Okay.
I hate that engine.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I prefer to have the...
That's such a big thing. I know it's easy for me to sit here and say, you know, it's the engine, but it's the engine. I mean, that's a big thing, and that's what's so frustrating. Everything else about this deal is fantastic. I love it. But very seldom do I ever see that Volvo engine get good fuel mileage. Even the people who listen to me all the time, try all that stuff. Now, it keeps getting better, but they usually start somewhere around the low sixes, if you're lucky. Many times they start in the high fives, and we struggle to get it up into the low sevens. Some guys get really lucky and get it to the mid sevens, and if you get it to the mid sevens, I get pretty happy. But it's tough. There's no guarantee you'll get it to the mid sevens, and then you have that issue of service. I don't like any of the Volvo dealers I've ever been to. I don't like their dealers. Their mechanics aren't very well trained, in my opinion. Their parts system is horrible. I'm always waiting on parts for my Volvos, and I'd hate to have to wait on engine parts the way I do on truck parts. So as much as I love this deal, I would have to pass on that. Now, you might look at this and go, you know what? I like it enough. I'm going to take a chance on the engine.
Right. Well, then, can Bruce Malis, can he do anything to Volvo?
He does nothing with Volvo engines. He's just never gotten around to it. You know, it takes time to develop, learn how the engine works, develop all the products and the fixes. And, you know, they're always working on another engine. I'm getting ready to donate my Mercedes. I'm going to give them one of my trucks with a Mercedes and just let them have it so that they have a Mercedes engine to develop as they've got time. But I don't think they've ever put any real time into a Volvo. Now, we could still do things like manifold, muffler, fast system. We could do all the externals. There's just not much they can do as far as programming the ECM or those kind of things.
I see. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that answers my questions for this evening, so appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You've just got some thinking to do there. That's a tough one. Like I say, for me, I would be able to walk away from it. But I could also see where somebody might, like I said, love the rest of the deal. Just don't like that engine at all. Oh, it looks like we're going to have to wrap this up. Looks like we're all out of time tonight. So I want to thank everybody for joining me. And we will see you back here next time. Well, you know what? Lisa's... I'm going to put a hold on the music. Lisa wants... Oh, well, I thought I was going to take one more call, but it looks like he's gone. Yeah, it looks like I lost him. So, looks like we're going to have to wrap this up. So, we will see you back here next time. If you're listening to us live right now, we'll see you tonight for the live show on SiriusXM as well. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.